Match. Ba 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 ba. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Hello, the princes that were promised. The Watchers on the Couch, continuing the official rewatch of Game of Thrones, the entire series in preparation for season 7. Within 4 months, we'll know pretty much everything about the Winds of Winter.
We have already witnessed a whole lot of the Winds of Winter, and no one's really realized it
yet.
Because even if you look in the synopsis for the season, it already says Winds of Winter and Dream of Spring. I'm telling you, a lot of that's...
Wait, it says it in synopsis for...
I read it someplace.
For last season or
this season? Coming up? This right. Season, it already says, and it mentions Dream of Spring already.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, we are closer to Dream of Spring material than we are beginning of Winds of Winter. What we saw in that last couple episodes of Winds of Winter, Battle of the Bastards and all right. That is towards the end of the Winds of Winter. And that is the reason why I still feel that Jon will have a big part in a battle against Ramsay. I think by that point already, Stannis might be defeated and killed. I know a lot of people still... Stannis was really the leader. We're past that already. This is a second battle with Ramsay. Just shorned it up, made it a bloodbath. But bottom line is, I just think what we saw those last 2-3 episodes, that is midway going towards the climax of Winds of Winter. We're just finishing up now. This next season is going to start with the Winds of Winter. You're never going to realize that at the end of this season it's going to be a lot of Dream of Spring stuff.
Do you think there's any Winds of Winter material left? Or do you think that season 7 is going to be basically all Dream of Spring?
I'm sure there's some stuff left.
I didn't want to speculate on the book, but you have to think that the Winds of Winter, the book, if we ever get this, the others will cross the wall.
You have to think so, right? I mean, you're going to put in the last book.
Right.
Oh, so finally they got across the wall.
Right. Like that'll be like the last chapter, they get across the wall.
The others have to at least attack Castle Black and vanquish the Night's Watch. Anyways, we're back.
We're talking about season 2.
Season 2.
Back, take our minds back to better days. Season 2, a lot of people got on board with Game of Thrones. Season 1 didn't have the viewers, but it had people came to the series and binged it after season 1 was done. And season 2, a lot more people were on board. A lot of them were new book readers. I had a distinct idea of what it would be based on what I had read.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being disappointed quite a few times that it wasn't exactly that.
That's when they first started to make some changes.
Nothing major, but...
Right. I first started reading the books after season 2 came out. So I saw like season 2 first, like season 1 and 2. I binge-watched and I got to the books. Having seen the first 2 seasons, one of the biggest changes in season 2 that I thought... And I was very confused when I was reading it. And that this is where like the show confused my interpretation of what I was reading. It kind of like made me a little like discombobulated a bit, was the whole Harrenhal, where in the book it's more Roose Bolton's there with Arya, and the show it's Tywin Lannister.
Yes.
That. Because
yes.
When I was reading that, I'm kind of like, well, all right, well, when's Tywin again? Then when's Tywin again? Who's this Roose? I was getting confused who Roose Bolton was.
Right.
At that
okay,
point.
I can see that. First time I read that, I was confused also, because that's when you start expanding on these characters where you know you read the name, but you're not sure exactly who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And Roose Bolton, you thought he was Rob, but then he seems like he's a bad guy, and you want him to win, but it doesn't
right.
Seem like it's right that he's
winning. You just think like everyone who's with Rob is automatically good natured, good guy,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
you're getting confused. Let me ask you a question, since you read the books before season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you kind of mentioned this before about Stannis. Did Stephen Dillon meet your expectation of what Stannis would look like?
No. Not at all. Although...
He grew on you a little bit or not?
He definitely grew on me. Yeah, because I did like Stephen Dillon's portrayal of Stannis. I don't want to say he gave the role life, because I think that... I always argue that Stannis is one of the best written characters in A Song of Ice and Fire. Even though he's so like cut and dry, you almost always know what he's going to say, but... In that is the beauty of the character Stannis. You know him almost better than any other character, and he's got no point of views, he's got nothing, but you know Stannis. When he has a sense of humor, no matter how dry it is, and he doesn't intend for it to be funny, it's always funny. That's why I like the character Stannis. So Stephen Dillon wasn't what I pictured, but it's so easy to picture that character Stannis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's completely different from the book character. There's some differences, but I feel like as the seasons go on, he doesn't do the things that Stannis does, but he is very Stannis-like, if that makes sense. Stephen Dillon was pretty much the biggest addition to the cast going into
season right. two. Well, it's those three. It's Stephen Dillon, it's Liam Cunningham, and right. Carice Van Houten, or Houten, whatever her name is.
And it's real important for those characters to work, because that was the first expanse. Every year we would get new characters, varying levels of importance, but Stannis was, and Davos, Melisandre more so, stick around long term to the end game.
What are the new characters that we have in season two?
Brells were...
Obviously Caress was key. We had...
Loras was season one, but then Margaery in season two. Just Margaery. Queen of Thorns wasn't until season three, and then Maestral wasn't, I think, until season four.
Brienne
was season two. Yep, that was an important one. Roose Bolton, again, very important. There was a lot of holes to fill without Ned and without Robert. We'll talk more about this in part two when we go over the characters, but it was more of a small roles becoming bigger roles in season two. Tyrion, he did somehow have a bigger role than he had in season one, even though he had a very large role in season one. Catelyn felt like her role diminished in season two. It was pretty much the same. She had less to do.
Well, for her story, this was kind of like the Sam. This was kind of like the Sam. She's kind of like a sandwich character, right? You know, I'm going to make sense of this once I finish. We talked about it when we reviewed the first season. She does all this stuff that triggers all this other stuff.
Right.
All her meddling. Season two, she really doesn't. There's definitely some things that she does. You know, she's definitely, you can definitely see her pissing people off. Season three, again, though, she goes back to being the meddling. Well, I guess it's that whole entire house at that point in season three. It's that whole entire house. It's not even just her then. It's right. The idiot brother over there.
Edmure.
That's my boy. You know, it's like you see where she gets it from.
Yeah.
You know, this is a family
issue.
This is a family issue. This is not a singular problem. Right. This is a whole family issue. You know, we've seen the nutty sister in season one.
Yeah.
We get the idiot brother in season three. Here's the sandwich in a nutshell. House Tully gonna Tully, by far the worst house. If I were Ned George, I'm telling you right now, George R. Martin, you're changing their words. House words are their new house words. When you finish Dream of Spring and all these House Tully's new words will be hook, line, and sinker.
House Tully survives. They may not even survive.
Yeah. God, I'm praying for it. Hook, line, and sinker. She doesn't do the damage that she does in season one. By then, it's already started. She's in full bloom of the flame that she already started.
Catelyn Tully in all her glory.
Yeah. I mean, she has a lot of stupid things in season two. A lot. She, you know what? I gotta take it back a little bit. Towards the end of season two, she just screws up even more with the Kingslayer and all that. I gotta take it back. I was trying to give her a little bit of credit that she actually does a lot of bad.
Two-thirds of the season, it looked like she kind of learned her lesson.
Right, but no, she just can't help herself. She just can't help herself.
Not just her son, but just the entire, everybody that answered his call and went to war.
Right, I'm just going to release Jaime Lannister.
My daughter's back.
The biggest chip that Rob had.
The only.
Only chip, really. I mean, really, as when things really start to unravel, even after Rob breaks his vow, he still had Jaime. And that would be a big chip against Tywin.
You said this before, somehow it got into the Red Wedding, but having Jaime...
I don't think it happens like that, if it happens at all. Gunless.
Tywin wouldn't have trusted it because...
Right.
Maybe...
Because if I'm like...
Maybe the Freys still tried because then...
Yeah, but could you imagine if smart thing to do would be to have Jaime... Listen, he's my hostage. He's going to be at the same freaking table. I mean, I guess it's easy for me to say this, you know, looking at hindsight.
Right.
Could you imagine if Tywin okays that and all of a sudden an arrow kills Jaime? The lashes are going up and they're wiping out Walder Frey.
Yeah. And Walder Frey wouldn't chance that.
No. Because Walder Frey is just all about survival.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he would have done the Red Wedding move without Lannister support.
No.
Even unspoken.
But once Jaime's gone, do whatever you want, Walder Frey.
No policy. There's no protection.
Thank you, Catelyn. And that whole time, well, and we're going to eventually get to them when we get to the episode, which I believe is episode 4 or 5, when the Baratheon brothers are talking, and Catelyn just there, and she's like, "If you are my brother, if you are my son,
you don't say that shit to Stannis."
Oh my god,
Renly's one thing.
Like, Renly's probably like, "All right, whatever." Stannis is probably like, noose.
Yeah.
And I do love that scene. When we get to our
yeah, talk that, more that scene did work scene. Out well. We'll start from the top. We're going to go through exactly how we did with season one. We're going to go through the episodes, and we're going to rate them.
I think this season you'll start seeing some of the scores go down a little bit. Season one, you know, I think there was like a consistency of eights.
It's not a drop-off in quality from season one to season two, but it's a drop-off in consistency.
Right.
We were talking about consistency on our side. There's a you know, about season one, but consistency between episodes.
Right. Season one had a lot of good episodes. Maybe one when they're bad. Like, season two, you can start seeing that there's more than one bad episode in there. That it's maybe two or three kind of episodes kind of like where...
There's one bad episode, which I will say I think is the only bad episode in the series. And it's a good contrast because, I mean, up until... I don't know if I would still call it the best episode of the series, but definitely up until this point in time, Blackwater was the best episode right. of the series. And The Princess of Winterfell, I thought, was the worst of the series. You didn't get anything like that in season one. There's no roller coaster whatsoever. Here you start to see, you as the stories branch out...
You're kind of seeing some loops in the in, you know, some valleys going up, you go down, up, and down. Part I think you can see it worse in season three, and... When we get to season three eventually.
You know what? You might be right.
Season three, there's actually a whole.
What do you think that is? My theory is I think that it has to do with the second unit, right? Because Ben F. Weiss can't be everywhere. The director right. can't be on every episode at every scene, especially something like this where.
True, good point.
You know, all these different filming locations.
They had to expand. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing out is. I always use a line from Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, when Bilbo says, I feel like I'm butter being spread around too much bread. You only have like one scoop. You got to feed five people and it's just not enough.
Right.
So you're not getting overall insights of the story that, needs to be told.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think that's the reason for it. Like I said, it's not a dip in quality. It's a dip in consistency. It's not like every episode that has a scene that's like, ugh. But some episodes do, whereas season one, you didn't really have that. It's a lot tighter. Starting from the beginning, the North remembers, and I think it's important to note that with North remembers, is the first time you experience it. You kind of get it most of the following seasons of Game of Thrones. The North remembers is more of a catch-up episode than it is moving the narrative forward. Right?
They really do that in the first like three or four seasons.
Yeah.
Like, episode 10 is kind of falling off. Yep. This is where they're going. Not really doing major stuff.
Yeah.
Episode one of the next season is kind of like a recap of where everyone's at.
And it's not that nothing happens at all, but, like, not a whole lot happens. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of reorienting the audience of where these characters are at, which I can understand for a show like this with this many characters, especially for season 2, season 3, season 4. But by the time you get to season 5, then it's like, you know, if you're with this show, you know who these guys are.
Right.
You know, we got to kind of press on. But we start, the North remembers, we have Joffrey's name day tourney, where the Hound is just making short work of everybody. Sir Dantas hollered. He shows up drunk, and Joffrey makes him drink the wine, and Sansa...
tells him to stop.
Yeah. Jack Gleeson is... I miss that character because of the way he's portrayed. Mm-hmm. He really added a lot of dimension to the program. We go to Winterfell. Bran is ruling as the Stark in the North, and he's having a wolf's dream, but he's also holding court for Northerners. It's just boring to him. He's sitting next to him to Maester Luwin.
Rickon's there just crushing walnuts or where he was crushing.
Right. Another out of the crypts with his dog. Nobody knows what's going on. But we get the Red Comet, and Osha says that the Red Comet means one thing, boy, dragons.
The Brian Silkers out there, this is what they go for, is that this is the sign for dragon, this is Daenerys is calling, and this is...
Well, maybe it means Danny, dragons.
This is Azor Ahai.
Maybe it doesn't mean actual dragons, but you say a time for wolves, you don't mean wolves, you mean Starks. So when they say dragons, maybe Targaryens is what she means, but that's not what she means. You know, it's one of those George Martin double meaning words. But we get another edit. Once Osha says dragons, we go across the narrow sea to Daenerys, trying to cross the Red Waste. We don't get a whole lot of Daenerys in the first episode.
No.
We go to Craster's Keep, and we hear about Craster, and this kind of reminds me of Loras and Renly from the first season. If you read Game of Thrones, you know that they're gay, but it never comes out and says that they're gay. Mm-hmm. You get the Rainbow Guard and the Clash for Kings, they're close, they pray together. You get those kind of things, and you kind of figure out that they're gay. Craster's Keep, with his sons, it doesn't come out in the books and tell you that his sons... he's giving them to the others.
Mm-hmm.
It can be implied. You can figure it out. In the show, it spells it out.
Samwell says, where are all the sons? They have all the daughter. Where are the sons? Yeah. Do you want to lead one day? Yes. Then learn how to follow.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned it. It's very interesting that both John and Danny have a Mormont giving them advice. Yeah.
We did say it's about season one, and it is. It's real cool.
Yeah, Jorah with Danny, you have Jira with John, and...
And they both, I mean, think about it, they both had a Targaryen giving them advice, yeah, too, in a sense.
Yeah, Viserys. Just wasn't
giving her too much advice, but...
Yeah, yeah, Maester Aemon with John, and it's probably that scene in the North, remembers. Jira says, "Who am I?" And they're looking at her. "And who are you?" Jon Snow. "Who are you?" "I'm a steward of the Watch. If you want to lead one day, then learn how to follow." Like, it's setting up already.
Yeah. That is that first step. That is the North remembers.
Good advice. You have to know how it is to follow someone to actually lead them.
If you're a leader, you've got to be able to deal with people like Craster. You have to be able to deal with that.
I always call Craster too, I think. Yeah.
What was your dentist's name?
Crentist.
Crentist.
Maybe that's why
he... like dentist.
That's my way he became a dentist. I know, Dwight. I know you went to Dean. I know what you did.
All right, we also get in this episode Rob and Jaime Lannister in their mock cage.
Yeah, that was a great scene. That was a great scene.
It was a good scene.
Again, I love that
not
scene.
Not a book scene, but it's a great scene in...
The Three Defeats.
Right, re-establishing that Rob's been winning some battles, and Jaime's just like, "Well, you're not going to be my father." And that's the cross of conflict.
Should that Grey One killed him?
Yeah, Grey One comes out.
Which is so sick. I mean, it was really to see this dire old battle, you know, that it really ends so big, and you can see that Rob's using, you know, its intimidation factor.
Getting too used to the scent of blood and battle. This dire old, it's a killer. This is a big change from the book where they're at River Run at this point in time, whereas River Run's not involved in Game of Thrones yet. Right? Question King. At the end of a Game of Thrones. They're in Riverrun when he's declared King of the North. That's where he stays, and that's where he plans his campaign from. I mean, Rob's war campaign is night and day from the book. It's just logistically, they can't do what they did in the book. Jaime never left Riverrun. He was in the dungeons of Riverrun, whereas Rob says that he keeps him with him because if he kept him at one of his bannermen's castles, Tywin would learn about that and send an offer to them or attack them. It's safer to keep Jaime with him. And it's a good point. It's a good way to solve that problem of including Riverrun this early on in the story. It could have worked to introduce Edmure and the Blackfish. I think it could have worked if they wanted to do it, but the way they planned it out, I understand. It's okay. We get the scene with Joffrey and Cersei, where Joffrey's heard rumors about her and his uncle Jaime. Cersei slaps him. Joffrey says, "Pretty much never again."
Right there in the throne room. When they're all, like, fixing up the room, I think.
It's a good dimension of Joffrey that they add, because Joffrey says that he heard about her and Jaime, and then he heard about all the bastards that his father had. So he says to her, "Robert fucked other women once he grew tired of you." He says that to his mother, and Cersei automatically slaps him. And he says, "You'll never do that again." Kind of shows Joffrey being Cersei-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the scene where all of Robert's bastards are getting killed, including the baby at the brothel, which Janice Slint kills. We end this episode with Gendry, another one of Robert's bastards, and Arya.
Arya.
We haven't seen the whole episode with Jorn heading for the wall.
Right.
You know, they haven't gotten very far. So, I mean, it's not a bad episode. It's not an amazing episode. It was a catch-up episode. I think I was a little bit disappointed the first time I saw it, just because I was picturing something else, but on a rewatch, it's a good episode. That is what it needs to be. So, what do you think? Scale 1 to 10.
I'm going to say 7.5, because I really like that Rob and Jaime scene. I like other parts in that episode.
Okay.
I kind of like the introduction to Stannis. I like to see, that's also we see when the guy tries to poison Melisandre.
Yeah.
That's 7.5.
So you're going 7.5?
I'm going to go 7.5.
You know what? I'm going to go with an 8. Go an 8 because it does a good job reorienting everybody and not resetting the story, but the story has changed from season one, and it does a good job of catching you up, plus reintroducing characters you know but now have a bigger role.
Right.
For instance, Rob and Jaime, we didn't really see a whole lot of in season one. So the Nightlands is episode 2, and this is another one I remember being quite disappointed in this episode the first time I saw it. Arya's traveling up the King's Road with the Night's Watch.
There just seems to be like a lot of in these episodes, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there's not like, what's the word? There seems just to be some more characters than others. What's the word?
Meandering.
I can't think of the word. Of course, I can't think of the word. Why would I be able to think of the word? Whatever the case, just a lot of
too much jumping around from character to character. Well, how about this? Season one, each episode felt more cohesive and more like a story within the episode. mm-hmm. more of a narrative within that one episode.
Right.
Season two.
When now you're more catch, you jump in there, you jump in there. You're not. It's almost as if they wanted to just keep scene short to come back to him, but they kind of ruin themselves a little bit. You're trying to get into the character, you're trying to get into the situation, and all of a sudden it's like, it's white. We're in.
It's almost like now. I don't want to ask you if you ever watched a soap opera before, but.
Yeah.
You must have at some point in your life seen a soap opera, even though like a Beverly Hills 90210 or something like that, where you get little scenes of every character every episode.
Right.
So you don't really get a complete narrative, you just get a catch up. A part of a bigger narrative, and
right.
I feel like that's what season two was,
right.
And maybe that's why it didn't work so well for me.
Too many characters,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably the reason why I like season six so much, is there's more times with each character. Because even season five is struggling that way too. Because even season five, it's just like boom, boom, yeah. Too many characters, you know, and then there's always someone getting upset. Oh my god, there was no Arya in that episode. Oh, there was no John. There was no Danny.
Well, they can't. But they were sure, and it does work for season two. They were sure to keep Tyrion in every episode because they knew that he's the main attraction as far as characters. Maybe another reason why season two doesn't work so well for me is because adapted from A Clash for Kings, the best part of A Clash for Kings is Arya's chapters. Right?
Ah, I love Arya's chapters.
Amazing. There's other good stuff. I love the Theon chapters in that also.
The John chapter is when he's at the wall, when he's north of the wall, when he's...
Yeah, well, I mean, the half hand.
Oh, my
God. I don't like that adaptation of the half hand. Like, the best parts of A Clash for Kings, the parts that make it such a good book...
Aren't really there.
They didn't really nail it. They didn't. It felt like they were trying to make the transition from Ned and Robert to John and Arya. They didn't quite do it. They kind of hung on to Tyrion too much and hung on to Catelyn too much. They should have been brave, and they should have... Some of these characters they should have used less. It's kind of like the Tyrion thing last season. He didn't need to be in every single episode because we know who Tyrion is. We know what he's about. We're not going to forget about him if he's not in an episode. But they give him in there. They put him in every episode. Why, instead of putting every character in every episode, why not do an episode with just Arya and Jon, both of them going on a journey?
Right.
And you go alternate between scenes. It's a much better story, and you don't need the Roz bullshit. You know what I'm saying? This stuff you can cut out that you don't need. And that's the way I was thinking, so that's why it was disappointing to me. But on a rewatch, it's not as bad.
Right.
But that is the problem. We catch up with Arya. Arya thinks the City Watch is looking for her, but they're really looking for Gendry. And Gendry knows that she's a woman. Lord Varys finds out about Shay, who Tyrion has snuck into King's Landing. Jilly, we meet Jilly. She asks Sam for help. And Sam goes
Jilly,
and asks...
Isn't it Gilly?
Gilly.
Gilly.
Yeah, Gilly. Sam goes and asks John for help, and John's like, what could we possibly do with her?
I don't know.
Daenerys will go back to the Red Waste with Daenerys, and she sent out three riders in search for anything, safe haven. But Carl comes back without a head. Oh, Tyrion sends Janna slim to the wall, which I like that scene.
One of the best scenes probably in that whole entire season. Mm-hmm. That's a great scene.
And Bronn becomes the head of the City Watch instead
yeah.
of, what is the name of that character in the book that becomes the name of the head of the City Watch? Probably the worst written character in A Song of Ice and Fire. The Iron, what's his name? Sir...
Shit, Swain?
No, Swan? not Balan Swan, no. He was a knight, he becomes a Kingsguard.
Right.
But the Iron Hand or the Iron... I don't fucking know, but they just give Bronn that role and it makes perfect sense. And then we finally get to meet Baelin Greyjoy at the end and gets back to Pike. We get that whole scene with Yara and...
Very disappointing Yara's... I don't mean to...
Yeah.
You know...
Although...
The actress, you know, they could be a little hotter, I think.
Ah, dude, for sure. I mean...
That scene in the book is almost kind of like another Aerion Martell type chat. The way, the way it's just being written, it's just like, woo!
Yeah. But it's beautifully shot, and we get that Iron Island music, which is just...
And even in the book, this is one of my biggest gripes... with this story. Very well might be my biggest gripe with the story, how it functions as a whole. It's on George. It's not even the show doing this. Like a week before this, you got Theon out there, you know, you're my brother, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then next you know, boom, he turns on him. It just seems so poorly, not well thought of.
I
understand why Theon was doing it, the psychological aspect. I understand it. I'm not questioning that.
Right.
But it just seemed, it was just so, so quick. I mean, that's what he was holding. I don't know. Yeah, too soon. It was just like, King of the North, let's step in the back.
Right. He was, the biggest proponent for Robb being
king. Right, right. Again, I understand the psychologically what he was thinking, why he thought he had to live up to his father. He wanted to like make amends. He thought that was the way to do it. He wanted a bigger responsibility.
Game of Thrones did a better job showing that inner conflict with what he did than Martin does, right? He's writing that note, and then he burns it, and like he wants to tell Rob, give him a warning.
It's something that it's a more of a visual thing, I think. And Alpion's a good actor. We can see that he's very tormented, and he's very tormented up until season 3 or 4. Was it season 4? Early on in season 4, when Ramsay was talking with Theon. Theon tells him, my father was killed at King's. My real father was killed at King's Landing.
Season 3. Because he thinks Ramsay's helping him.
Yeah. Right.
Davos meets with Salador San, sells sales. John follows Craster out in the middle of the night, carrying an infant in his arms, and he goes to the forest. He hears the icy language of a White Walker echoing from the trees. He draws his sword and rushes towards the sound of the baby's cries. He sees a dark figure lift the child from the ground, and then Craster knocks him out, and that's how the episode ends. I remember I didn't like that at first, but again, looking back, that's the first time we've seen a White Walker since Winter's Coming, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had to do it. These guys are the main threat. You need to
show them once in a while.
Yeah, but overall, the Nightlands is more of a setup episode. I don't think a whole lot of action happens. I think I'm going to drop down to a a 7 for the Nightlands.
I'm going to drop down a full point, also 6.5.
Wow, first 6 we've got.
Yeah, there's gonna be a couple more, I think.
Yeah, I have that feeling too. What is dead may never die is episode 3. And we pick up right where we left off with John getting knocked out by Craster. He gets dumped at Lord Commander Jor Mormont's feet. He thinks Jon Snow's spying on him. And John has to explain to Jor Mormont, who just went off on him last week.
Right. And then this is where John figures out, like, wait, you knew what he was doing. Right.
He serves crueler gods than we do. Or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But basically saying, like, yeah, I know about it. I get that you're angry, but this guy has been the difference between life and death for many rangers. He's an asshole, but he welcomes us here, and he feeds us, and he puts a roof over our head. Beyond the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
The White Walkers don't come here and attack here. It's not good what he's doing, but he's living out here, and this is how he lives. Not really defending him, but just saying, like, basically nothing he could do about it, and this guy helps us out more than he hurts us, so. Catelyn arrives at Renly Baratheon's camp, and we meet Brienne of Tarth, who is beating the crap out of Loras Tyrell.
Mm-hmm.
They are the Knights of Summer, and winter is coming. On Pike, Yara is giving charge of a fleet of 30 ships to sail against the Stark's holdings in the north, and he's supposed to reeve the coast with one vessel, the Sea Bitch. And Baelin tells Theon, your time with the wolves has made you weak. Tyrion gets Shae a job as Sansa's
companion. Yeah, I was just reading that right now. Shae in the books is bad. Shae in the show is bad. The actress who plays Shae is really annoying. My little lion. Oh, God.
But at the same time, we do get one of my favorite parts. And very, very well done from the book. Tyrion finding out who the spy is.
Oh, great. That was a great part, yeah. That was a great part. Of course, it was by Cell, the freaking goddamn snitch.
Yeah. He gets brought to the Black Cells. And at Renly's camp, we almost get a gay sex scene, but then Margaery comes in. But she says, you're the king, and your enemies don't want us to be married. The best thing you can do is put a baby in my belly. Theon writes a letter to Rob to warn him, but then he burns it. I really like this scene when he gets baptized on Pike.
Music's very good here. Yeah.
Because here you get Stannis and the Red God music and the Iron Island music. Ramon is really starting to step up. Yeah. Littlefinger is mad at Tyrion for getting played, and Tyrion asks him to visit Lady Stark with a message.
He's all upset about it. He's like, and then Tyrion's like, I'm paraphrasing. He's just like, well, I hope we had two because I wanted you for my next plan. Let's see. You got a plan?
Varys comes by, but he's not as angry as Littlefinger, but he says power resides where men believe it resides. A very small man can cast a very large shadow. And we end this episode with the
Yoren Sea,
which is not nearly as good a battle as it was in the book, but still good enough. I think this episode is a big step up from the last episode, and I am going to go 8.25. Quite an 8.5. John,
what do you think?
A 7. Yeah. Wow. All right.
A 7.
John's not messing around with season 2. Garden of Bones, episode 4, and I know we get. Okay, this is where...
Yes, because that's where he arrives at Harrenhal, Hall, right?
Yeah.
And then and that's where the Tinkler's torching the because now at this point Arya and Gendry they're all being sent to Harrenhal because
it's like a prison camp.
Yeah.
And interesting, Tinkler, you don't know what tickling is when you read A Clash of Kings, but they make it seem like it's real horrible. And they have to show what tickling is in the book, and it turns out it's a rat, and they put it in a metal pot and strap it to you, and then they make it hot so the rat has to get out and it burrows through you. And it's about to happen to Gendry, but then Tywin shows up and says, what are you doing? He's like, you boy, what's your trait? He's like, I'm a blacksmith. A blacksmith? We need armor. Why would you kill a blacksmith? Tickler's trying to get information out of Gendry.
Right.
And the information is about Beric Dondarrion and the Brotherhood Without Banners, who are, at this point, conducting guerrilla warfare on the Lannisters. Rob meets one of your favorite characters in this episode. What the fuck is her name?
Why did the show change her name to Talisa? It just makes no sense.
We get the first scene with Bruce Bolton.
Yes.
They're touring the battlefield, and he says, 5 Lannisters dead for every one of ours. And then he suggests torturing the surviving enemies for information. He says,
Ron's like, I'm not going to have
it. A naked man has secrets, a flayed man has none, or something like that.
I think even after the Red Wedding, I think we checked the whole entire theory, how the show was doing the whole, like, Roose is loose theory, that like, he knew about Talisa. Talisa was a plant.
Oh, right. I remember that theory, yeah.
But then why kill Talisa then?
She wasn't really the plant, but that was a theory for a while that she was...
In the show, she was, like, taking, like, kind of, like...
Tywin had said that they had spies, which maybe just meant Roose.
That's, like, a cool scene of that. He's just, like, saying, we can't beat him on the field. We gotta find other ways to beat this guy. We're not gonna beat him on... For some reason, this kid is clever beyond his ears. We have to find other ways to defeat him.
Right. If we knew from the start how dangerous he would be, it'd be a different story. But he's already beaten Jaime, destroyed that half of the army. He's got us reeling. Joffrey's torturing Sansa in the Red Keep in front of, like, the entire court. He's holding a crossbow at her. He tells Meryn Trant to beat her up. And Tyrion comes in and saves her. And he yells at his nephew for mistreating his fiancée.
It's here again that he also reminds Joffrey that they have your uncle. Stop mistreating her. If word gets around back to Rob that you're hitting her and abusing her, and you don't know where Arya is... That's a big thing, too, because the Lannisters are very concerned, I believe, that they don't know where Arya is.
Right.
Because they know...
They're saying that they have her, but they don't really have her.
They don't, right. They don't want that leaking out, because it leaks out. It sets up the Littlefinger scene a couple of episodes later, you know, the whole lie, that, you know, Arya is in King's Landing with Sansa, and it's not true. If I'm Rob, and I know Arya's not around King's Landing, and she's still alive, no one knows where she is, I'd be like, kill her. Here's Jimmy's head. Kill him.
Go ahead.
Just a telly anyways. Yeah. Get rid of her. The whole thing was they wanted to try to trade Jimmy.
Both of them.
But even Rob knew he needed more than just...
His Bannerman wouldn't stand
for it. Yeah, he needed something else.
Yeah. Like Jimmy for Ned. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Jimmy for two Arya. Girls.
You need it. It's like that commercial. You need something else.
Yeah. You need a lot more else, because Jaime, that's, like we said, that's his only trump card, is Jaime. Bronn tells Tyrion that maybe Joffrey would be a little bit nicer if he gets laid. So he says, Roz gets in trouble again. Just to beat Daisy savagely with a scepter. So unnecessary. Littlefinger visits Renly Baratheon, tells him there are people in King's Landing who would support him as a ruler. He talks to Queen Marjorie and notes she sleeps in a separate tent. This is just Littlefinger getting all over the place, but he finally meets with Catelyn.
Is this the scene in Grand? Okay, this is. I had to talk about this because I just cannot stand Catelyn Tully, and this is one of the reasons Littlefinger brings to her Ned's bones.
Right.
Obviously, her head.
Bones, right.
And before this, Littlefinger is actually trying to make a move on Catelyn.
Right.
He's trying to, you know, maybe this is my way of getting into her panties for the first time.
Right.
And, you know, she slaps him, like, how dare you do me? Do you know you, you know, who are you? And she wants nothing to do with him, you know, like, oh, you turned on us, you betrayed my husband, we believed you. And then all of a sudden, all Littlefinger has to do to make a 180 on her feelings. I hope you don't feel that way. But I do want to, you know, Sansa and Arya are doing fine. Right away, like, Tully gonna Tully.
Yeah.
Just forget whatever just happened.
All right, I trust you again.
I trust you.
We see the mountain, in this episode, and it's like this the worst Lurch. Version. The worst version.
Yeah, he is that. I tell you, I you know my favorite version of the Mountain was season one.
Yeah, mine too. I don't mind the current one, but
he's way too young. Yeah. Way too young. They could at least done something to his face to make him scruffed up, because he's older than Sandor in the books. Yeah, and meanwhile, you got this guy. You got Roy McCain, who looks
older.
This guy looks all like
a beard, but stuff, like just,
you know, like a older. Scruff mark on his face or something. Like he got beat up.
Yeah.
It's believable. He's fought so much. I mean, someone got a lucky stab on him or something. You know, like a scar on him somehow.
We get the Catelyn, Stannis, and Renly meetup, which Iron Throne is mine by right.
Great scene.
Stannis says, and he's not giving an inch. And Renly's just like, psh, I get the bigger army. Little does he know, he's got a shadow baby coming to him at the end of this episode.
Come and dawn, we shall see.
Again, it's a lot of things going on, and who are the guys that get more than one scene? Joffrey gets more than one scene. Renly barely gets more than one scene. The Daenerys scene, again, she's just...
She's early on, they should the same thing that they should have done Tyrion this season, just combined all our little scenes from those like three episodes into one.
She gets one episode or two episodes,
right? Or one.
You can remember her, then I can forget her.
One like major scene in in episode two or something.
That's it. Those are the only people with more than one scene. That goes back to what we were saying. So Garden of the Bones does have a couple scenes that I like a lot, but as a episode of a TV show, it's not cohesive enough. If I just started watching the show with this episode, I would think it's a soap opera, or I wouldn't be able to keep up with it. So I'm going to go 6.75 Garden of Bones. And it's not because of any one scene that I disliked. It's just the editing and the...
Well, the pace is just to be said, I think. There's just too much going on, I guess. I'm going to give a 7.75.
Well,
major reason, it's an extra maybe even half a point, because I just love... the scene with the Baratheon brothers.
Yeah.
It's just so funny. It's comical that they just can't get along. Yeah. Catelyn in there, you and my sons, I put you in a room together before. Oh, my God.
I wish Stannis got a hold of her.
Stannis justice, 1, 2, 3. I like what he says, he's like, Lady Stark, your husband was a part of mine. I'm so strange to see you and my brother. Like,
right.
Why wouldn't, maybe it's because I was closer than they weren't thinking, but like, Rob said before, he's like, there's no way Renly should become king before Stannis.
Right, right.
And Bran can't come before me. There's no,
yet he sends her to...
I would have sent her... You would have sent Catelyn to Stannis. I think that would have been huge. I think Stannis would listen to this. I think he would.
Rob couldn't be king of the North.
No, not at all. Definitely not. Definitely not. But I think Stannis is smart enough where he would know, send your men down... we'll take King's Landing together.
Yeah.
I guess really had the same thought process, but you're skipping over the rightful heir and Stannis.
That's the thing.
You're Stannis insulting Stannis.
Yeah.
This way, now, you go to Stannis, you get Stannis' army with Rob's army, you defeat the Lannisters, you would have defeated Renly's army also.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this.
I mean, Renly's army is the wild card, though, because, no army, maybe the Lannisters, but no army's beating that army on their own. So, you do need an alliance, but Stannis isn't going to accept Renly as king, and he's not going to accept Rob as king of the North. Rob isn't going to put down his crown, because his bannermen made him king, so he's not going to let them down.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, as far as they all know, Joffrey is the rightful king. Nobody knows, in the show, Rob knows, but they haven't figured it out yet in the books. But you're right, it's so many what-ifs. Meanwhile, Tywin Lannister is just sitting pretty at Harrenhal, licking his wounds and getting ready for the next phase of the battle. And they're trying to jockey for position. Goes to Harrenhal. So the main part of this episode is Jaqen H'ghar.
And this is another part where the show really confuses the shit out of me with Arya's three kills.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember now in the box who the three kills are.
It's different from each one.
Yeah, it confuses the creator because... I'm reading the book and I'm just like, wait, no, let's, no, what?
This is the one where it starts off with the Shadow Baby. Because remember the Shadow Baby,
it's
born at the end of the last episode? All right, so the Ghost of the Harrenhal picks up, much like the Nightlands, picks up where.
Right.
North remembers.
I tell you, a lot of these episodes, I go back to back.
Mini cliffhangers. They're not really cliffhangers. They didn't quite have their footing with how to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them season 2, season 3 to really stabilize that. Without Ned, without Robert, without these characters who had so much gravity, they kind of held the show together. But we open up Ghost of Harrenhal with Renly getting killed by a shadow, which is a pretty difficult scene to sell because it's the first one with like magic, mm-hmm. you know, dark magic. The camp gets thrown into disarray. Stannis shows up and Littlefinger tells Margaery and Loras to flee while they still can. Loras wants to fight. And Margaery tells Littlefinger she wants to be the queen.
Yeah. I don't want to be a queen. I want to be the queen.
Alright, well, good luck with that because that's what Cersei wants too, so. Tyrion brings news of Renly's death to his sister. Lancel's recruited as Tyrion's spy. He tells her that Cersei's been asking about Wildfire.
Right, right.
Davos convinces Stannis to leave Melisandre behind when he launches his attack on King's Landing. Theon meets his crew.
Which he's not impressed with at all.
No, but Dagmar tells him they're not going to respect you until you prove yourself. This gives him an idea. I don't like this character of Dagmar. Arya serves food for Tywin and his bannermen. Haunted Castle of Harrenhal.
That's where Tywin kind of lectures her on. If you're going to try to pass as a servant girl, you have to make sure you say, "Me lord.
Me lord."
And yeah. Not, "My lord."
That was Roos in Clash for Kings.
Yeah.
With "My lord." And he does it again with Theon in The Dance of Dragons. We meet Corrin Halfhand in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Jon asks to go with him, right? To go scouting ahead.
Yes. Because he says, like, "Oh, you have Samwell here. He can take care of all your stuff that you need. Like, you're here.
Yeah.
All your steward obligations, you know, what's Sam going to do? He can help out, I can go with the half hand."
So this is the end of John's career as a steward then, right?
Yeah.
He did do a very good job as a steward, yeah. It must be said. But I guess he learned something.
And Danny said?
Danny gets invited to the House of the Undying by Pyat Pree. And we get a Karth.
Quaithe.
Quaithe.
With Jorah Mormont. "Will you betray her again?" "Never." Did you see that video I sent you, by the way? It's a YouTube video. It's a good video.
Oh, with with Jorah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. The music the guy played on that, it's really, really good. I love Jorah. Jorah's definitely a top 10 character for me.
Yeah, the TV show makes him... Yeah, you know, he's like one of those rare instances where the TV show kind of outdoes the literary
character. Khaleesi.
Now, why do they include Quaithe? What was the point? I doubt we're going to see her again.
Right.
I don't think we have seen her since. So, a masked woman warns Jorah to watch over Daenerys. Duh. Catelyn and Brienne ride Rob's camp. Brienne says she wants to kill Stannis. Catelyn tells her it'd be suicide. And then Brienne instead pledges her service to Catelyn.
Horrible move there, Brienne. Horrible move.
So Roderick tells Brienne that Torn Square is under attack. And Brienne sends Roderick and the remaining troops to fight the invaders.
Bad move, Brienne. Tully gonna Tully.
Mm-hmm.
I love that scene. It's like so like Brienne's like, he turns to Masterly and is like, "We gotta do something."
Tickler gets killed by the Ghost of Harrenhal, and that's the end of the episode. It wasn't great, but it was pretty funny, this episode. There's a lot of humor. Good Tyrion stuff. I'm going to go back into the sevens, and I'm going to give it a 7.5. And that's just because I remember I was laughing quite a few times.
Well, once again, we are way off together on our ratings here. Yeah. I am giving that a 6.75.
Oof. Brutal.
Some things I liked about it, again, I see a lot of this stuff is good aspects, bad. There's nothing that's really like, that was really an awesome scene.
Consistency.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game for season 2. The old gods and the new. We open with Theon capturing Winterfell. And Bran asks, Percy's like,
"Come on, get up. Here? Get up. Yeah. Draw back."
Torn not taking it seriously because it's Theon. Theon's his father's ward, so why would he assume him he'd be in danger at all? But it was there, and say which rule about Catelyn, which we'll both say horrible things about her, but she did not want to give up Theon. But right. She didn't think he would do this. That's not why she wanted to give up Theon. It was more to keep control over Balon
Green. Right. There's a reason why you don't give up Theon. You know, you give
away the Iron Islands, which you need to keep in check, especially at this point in time.
Right.
Nobody's thinking about the Iron Islands, and
if they kind of get forgotten about, strangely, because here's a guy that 10 years prior rebelled.
Right.
It's not like, "Hey, wait a minute, that guy that rebelled, you know, nah, don't worry about him. I'm sure he's content."
Ned says to Catelyn, I think it's in the book, I don't think it's in the show, but when she comes to King's Landing, he tells her to have, tell Helen Reed to put men at Mount Caelid. He also says to keep an eye on Theon, keep Theon close. Because Ned can see that if war breaks out, Balon Greyjoy is the kind of guy that's going to take advantage of that.
Right, right.
But once Ned's dead, nobody even thinks about it.
No. Almost so purposely so that so that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jorah didn't even bring it up. You know, he just... Right. He doesn't even have anyone even bringing it up. A away from the narrative, so you don't even think about it.
Well, you can see the narrative in the book, and you still don't think of it until it happens, until he has a plan, and you don't even know what the plan is until he does a plan. And it is a good plan. And I think he does it the same way in the TV show. So Roger Cassell arrives.
See, at this point in the book, this is also a change. At this point in the book, we've already met Mira and Jojen. We don't meet them only until season 3, though, on the show.
So Roger shows up and he gets beheaded for his troubles. Theon has a hard time beheading him.
Mm-hmm.
Dagmar functions as what Reek functions as in the book, and Reek ends up being Ramsay. And mm-hmm. I really wish, if there's one thing that I could change about season 2 of Game of Thrones, I wish they had included Ramsay Bolton as
Reek. They just do a lot of changes in the, maybe it's, I don't know, I was just so new, I couldn't depict what was actually a change and what was actually...
Well, it's hard because it takes you a couple reads to get really familiar with that story and then to know what's different in the show. But that's one thing, man. That reveal of Reek being Ramsay and how evil Ramsay is, you miss out on that. And it's a different kind of reveal in season 3, but it's not as good.
Mm-hmm.
Jon Snow's with the half hand and he says he'll die for the watch, and Corn says, I want you to curse and fight till your heart's done pumping.
Your death will be a gift south of the wall.
Corn and his men take out a group of wildling lookouts. Jon prepares to slay one and he realizes it's a young woman.
Oh, that's the next episode. He says that he'll die.
Corn leaves him to kill Ligret and he can't do it, and then they have to huddle together in the night to stay warm. Eesh. And then we have the bread riots, which aren't exactly bread riots. They're just We Hate Joffrey riots. As What's-Face goes off to Dorne. Princess Marcella goes off.
I know
they can't find Sansa, and Sansa's about to get raped, and the Hound.
Sandor's gotta come over there. That's another scene where Tyrion, like, Joffrey, I like that, like, Joffrey's like, who cares about her? And Tyrion's like, are you nuts, who cares?
What do you mean, who cares?
She gets like, your brother's dead. Like, you already killed the father. If you come back that she dies, they have to kill Jaime. At that point, Jaime would have to be killed, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's say you look back on the books. If they kill Sansa, you have to think Rob has to kill Jaime, you know? At that point,
you would think he would, but I don't think he would. Because I think he'd be like, well, how did she die? Or was it an accident? Because he's trying to think too much. He's trying to be like his father, whereas Jon is just kind of like, he is like his father. You know what I'm saying? Like, Rob has to put too much thought into being like Ned. So he overthinks things. So I think he would question it, how it happened, and then he'd wrestle with whether or not he should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe make the right decision and do it, but it wouldn't be automatic.
So Sandor gets there and saves the day.
Yeah. And then we get Arya at Harrenhal, and Littlefinger arrives, and she keeps her head down.
Right. Like, Littlefinger's kind of like, wait a minute.
Did Littlefinger realize it was her, or did...
He didn't know it was her. He looked at it like...
I kind of recognize you, but...
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm only interested in that telly look.
He looks like a Stark. Now we get the second death. Arya asks Tywin about his father and steals a scrap of paper detailing the Lannister movements against Robb. Armorly Lorch catches her with it, and this is the guy that killed Yoren. But she runs off, and she gets to Jaqen H'ghar, and she asks him to kill Armorly Lorch. So Armorly's about to go tell Tywin that his cupbearer has stolen his plans, and Tywin opens the door, and he's dead. Whatever. It's just... It feels contrived.
Right, I don't...
What is she going to do with plans against Rob? What is she going to, like, stop them? Like, what is she going
to
do?
Like, it seemed like a good idea. Like, you know, a good reason for them to... Oh, yeah, well, you know, he'll have the plan. We'll make that as the reason.
We get the, where are my dragons? Because Dany's dragons are stolen. And a hooded figure carries the hissing creatures to the House of the Undying. Bruce Bolton arrives with word from Winterfell that Theon has taken the castle. Rob declares he will march north.
I like his scenes in with him and Rob.
Yeah, you know, like, Bruce is playing him. And here's a perfect example. Rob wants to march north, and Bruce...
How can I call myself a king if I can't even hold my own castle? You are a king, and that's why you let someone else do it. Okay. I'll send my son, my bastard son, and 500 good men.
That's okay. All right, so they start to connect Ramsay to it, but you needed to see Ramsay at least in this season, and you don't. Asha enters Theon's bedroom, knocks him out with some wilding sex, and then Theon falls asleep. She sneaks out, kills his guard, and then motions for Rickon, Hodor, and Bran to follow. So they make the escape, get the hunt, but that's how this episode ends.
Mm-hmm. I love the hunt in the books.
Yeah, oh my god, it's awesome. And I feel like it's not so much here. But I do love the bread riots in this episode. again, it's one of those. It's like splits. Things that yeah, love, like things I really don't like.
It's only it's almost kind of like tough to give an honest review on it, like an honest total, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like now I'm just thinking, while I gave that one a 7.75, how much different was that from The Ghost of Harold, which I gave a 6.75?
I think Clutter. It's coming down to like one scene that makes or break
each episode.
The Baratheon Catelyn meeting, the bread riot scene. One scene. If it's done real good, then I give it a little better rating. But otherwise, most of these are 6, 7 on the plus side. Old Gods and the New, I give a 7.
Well, for the first time today, we agree. I give it a 7 also.
Nice. All right. I knew.
We had to agree on one of them.
That's it. We're done with the show for today, folks. We get to agree. Next episode, A Man Without Honor.
This has got to be the Jimmy Lannister episode. It's got to be about Jamie.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like this one and the next one are real bad. All right. Theon discovers Asha has escaped. He savagely beats one of his men and orders the rest to gather the horses and hounds to hunt down the prisoners. They track the boys to a nearby farm. John sleeps huddled behind Ygritte. He wakes and coyly asks him, "Did you pull a knife on me in the night?" John humiliated, meaning, did you have a boner?
Yeah.
Oh, man. John's humiliated. He forces her to continue their march back towards the Men of the Night's Watch, but as they walk, she pokes holes in his allegiances. And then we get the mountain, thinking that the poison dart that killed Armerly Lorch was meant for Tyrion Lannister. Okay. Arya serves Tyrion dinner, but the commander gives it to her to eat. It's clear to him that she's smart and a noble bird. Like, this is so, like, so what? You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to establish Arya and Tywin in a relationship, but they never, ever go back to it, ever.
Right, there's nothing... Right. Nothing really should come of it. There's nothing... There's no need to...
It would have been better served to have, like, an Arya Stark road trip adventure. Sansa approaches the Hound to thank him for saving her. Cersei tells Sansa, "Love no one but your children." Daenerys says, "Find my dragons." Ygritte says, "You know nothing, Jon Snow. Join Mance Rayder." Jaime Lannister kills his cousin, tries to escape, he gets brought back.
Jorah visits. I like that scene that it's like the car stops are like, "That's it."
Yeah.
"Do you forsake me, my lord? I am your liege's wife." Ugh. Die.
Quaithe visits Jorah again and tells him that...
Does she?
Yeah, to tell him that the thief that took the dragons is with Dany now. Piapri and Zarazon Doxus kill the rest of the 13 to take over. Like, just this whole... Just this new story. It doesn't make sense. Cersei reveals that she has Shae.
Yeah, but it's really... Shae, it's really our number one pal, Roz. What a waste. Oh my god.
And
I don't know why they wasted so much time and effort with that character. I don't know. What was the point?
Catelyn and Brienne realize that Jaime will not make it to morning because these Karstark men are so angry and want to kill him. So Catelyn frees him.
She frees him because he has that big speech. "Did it ever pain you that your husband, the Honorable Lord Eddard Stark, fucked another woman? So in some sense, I'm more honorable than them."
Yeah,
and that really...
Some good Jaime stuff. That's really the highlight of the episode for me.
Yeah.
And it ends with the fake deaths of Bran and Rickon, and Maester Luwin does like a Al Pacino and The Godfather 3 howl when he sees that they're dead. Honestly, bro, I think I'm going to say 6 just because the Jaime stuff's all right. Otherwise, I'd be in the 5s with this one.
Yeah. I'm going to say 6 point.
Oh.
I'm going to say 6.5.
All right. Fair enough.
I'll stick with 6.5. I was going to do a 6.25, but I figured...
You just go 6 then.
Yeah. Yeah, at that point, might as well just go 6. I think a lot of these episodes, I think like the past, you know, 4 episodes really, 4 or 5 episodes being, you know, they're all interchangeable in a way.
They really are.
You can...
And honestly, like, reading all this now, not a whole lot happened.
No, it doesn't. And it's funny... I think if I go back to season 1, I could probably... Each episode had something happen that you could probably... Oh, that was that episode.
The narrative kept moving.
I don't think I can... You know, if you told me that the meeting with Stannis and Renly happened in episode 7, I'd be like, okay, yeah, it did. It just seems like it's all...
We haven't even seen Stannis in a few episodes. Yogi said he's going to sail on King's Landing. It was like 3 episodes ago. You know? Nothing is happening. Nothing's happening.
You know what, I think it just goes back, they took a lot, like we said before, they took so much out of the journeys of some of these major characters.
Right.
that this is what I was left with. The Prince of Winterfell, number 8.
Theon welcomes his sister Yara to Winterfell, expecting praise.
That.
She scolds him. She reminds Theon that Robb Stark will have his head. And she says, come home with me. Don't die so far from the sea. Ygritte hands off Jon Snow to the Lord of Bones. Another adaptation that I did not like. Rattleshirt. Corn Halfhand is already his prisoner.
Right.
Rattleshirt prepares to kill Jon, but Ygritte argues convincingly that Mansory will be interested in Ned Stark's bastard. Jon is devastated to learn that the men in Corrin's group were killed by wildlings. Corrin says, see that it wasn't for nothing. And he begins arguing with Jon. So
another bad adaptation from the book. The books is so much better.
Well, they make Jon look out to be like real big time doofus here, which wasn't the case in the books.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I'm okay with that. A big mistake because he learns from it, and he does see that it wasn't for nothing. Dollar's Head, Gren, and Samwell Tarly dig trenches, and
they find the is that where they find the
Dragonglass buried by the Night's Watch? King Robb Stark, newly returned from the Crag with Lady Talisa Maegyr, explains to the circumstances of his engagement with the Freys. Saying he doesn't want to marry.
I don't want to marry the Frey girl. You really needed those ships or that boat, the car, whatever she said.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're having that little, you know, will they, won't they?
When they do, yeah. Is that where they, or is that episode 10 where they get married?
It's episode 10 they get married. They're interrupted with news that Ser Jaime has escaped with the help of his mom, and Robb marches into his mother's tent. Lord Rickard Carstark, right.
And Robb's like pissed. Robb's like, how could you?
And he takes the role of Edmure, sending more men to get the Kingslayer back. Bran's traveling with Shackle Jaime through the back roads of King's Landing. Jaime tries to goad his captain into showing him her sword skills, and she ignores him. Stannis is on his way to King's Landing, and Sir Kevin Lannister, who we haven't seen in a while, he advocates the royal family withdraw. Lord Tywin refuses to let the family retreat, aware of the message it will send. Just wasting time. You know what I'm saying? Like, nothing is going on.
It's like they're just waiting to get to the Blackwater, and this is what we're going to do.
Pretty much. We do get the funny scene where Arya tells Jack and Hagar to kill Jack and Hagar.
Right.
Instead of Weasel Soup, we get Jack and Hagar helping Hot Pie and Gendry and Arya escape. Tyrion's trying to figure out a strategy to use against Stannis.
Well, I got my lowest score so far this season.
I mean, this is just a whole lot of nothing. Robb tells Roose to let his bastard attack
the key on. I want the on myself.
Stannis names Davos Hand.
It's like all nice little things. It's not like it's bad per se.
Jorah tells Dany to secure the ship to take them to Astapor. Dany doesn't want to leave her dragons. She's still looking for her dragons, and they're gonna definitely go to the House of Undying. Every scene with Dany for the last 4 or 5 episodes has been about, they got my dragons, we gotta go get my dragons, we gotta go to the House of Undying. But she doesn't go. She doesn't find the dragons. It's just all meandering, just plotting along. And yeah, the Prince of Winterfell, I'm going 5. I'm going 5. And the only reason it gets a 5 is because it's Game of Thrones. Like, I would go below a 5, but I don't wanna go below a 5.
I'm gonna go 5.5.
Okay.
Again, I guess still now on the show, Ghost is with the Night's Watch now with Jon.
Right.
You know, in the books, he's there. He's actually helping Jon against the corner, right, against the Half Hand. So again, in my battle for what led more direwolves, it has to be lower than a 7. I usually got it a 6, but the thought of no Ghost in that scene with the Half Hand, 5.5.
Okay.
Like, I make a stand against the anti direwolf.
Make it early, man.
Yeah.
Because we at this point we didn't know that they were gonna. All right, he's not in that scene, but surely they'll use the direwolves where they're supposed to, and they just make a habit of not doing that. But look, even if this episode, even if the Prince of Winterfell was just a setup episode for the next one, for Blackwater, it wasn't even.
Doesn't really set. Doesn't really set the Blackwater that much. They left it, you know, all for that one episode, and I think they learned their lesson on that in later seasons, where they said they can't just have one episode or just one big battle. Like the Battle of Bastards was also Dany,
right?
Battle, you know, even, you know, the Wall was one big battle there. I think what happened, you draw people out. They do want to see other things.
Yeah, I mean, I get the idea of those episodes, but it works better with other things going on. Because, you know, even if you go see a movie, it's not an hour of a battle. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But yeah, Man Without Honor, The Prince of Winterfell, it just feels like a waste of 2 hours. It feels like this. Neither of those episodes were necessary.
Yeah.
And this could have been the 8-episode season.
Yeah, this could have been the 7-episode season right here.
Or maybe 10 and include... Start including the Tullys. Start including Ramsay Snow. Start including characters that could have been better having been in the show earlier.
It's almost as if they still were not sure if they were going to be around for another season or so. So why hire all these actors if...
Right. But they're not producing a show that will be around next season with these episodes.
Right.
But then we get to the Blackwater, episode 9, titled Blackwater.
I'm already just trying to end something up right now real quick, and it's not coming with the right calculation. So far, my average is so far through 8 episodes.
Oh.
Right now, I'm at a 6.8. And it's going to get saved up. It's going to go past the 7 because of the Blackwater. I'm just trying to think. For season 1, I guarantee it was probably close to an 8 average. And that was a consistent 8. That was a solid 8. This is going to get over a 7 because of Blackwater. I'm probably going to be I'm going to rank it at least an 8. And depending on where I get involved, regardless.
Blackwater will definitely...
Yeah, it's going to be inflated. Through all our time, we only agreed once, but we're kind of on the same average for the season.
With the Blackwater episode written by George Martin, a total difference in tone, a total difference in characterization, because you have the creator of these characters writing for these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not as much, there's no meandering, there's no treading on the same soil as you have been for 8 episodes. Finally, the narrative moves, and in the biggest way possible, with the battle that essentially ends the War of the Five Kings, which this season is supposed to be about the War of the Five Kings, and you feel like that.
And it's a roundabout way it is. It is, but it's
not like there's been no mention of.
Stannis is missing from episodes. You don't really know what he's doing.
Just like a lot of Arya with Tywin talking about stuff that's irrelevant.
Right. They definitely don't hit the emotional keys, the peril of the war. It's almost, again, the reason why I didn't like season 3 too much, because it just seems like all these episodes are just. They're just waiting to get to episode 9.
It's the main centerpiece.
Right.
That they're looking forward to, and everything else is just how we're going to get there. Little thought into how those storylines will play later on. Which is a shame, because this could have all been so much better. And even Blackwater would have been better if we had more at stake. If we cared more about Stannis and Davos. If we cared. I mean, we will give it Tyrion, even Joffrey, Sansa. We know these characters by now. We do care about them. No one gives a fuck about Shay. Cares about Shay. Cersei does a great job in the Blackwater episode. Yes. Tyrion does a great job in the Blackwater episode. Until this point, this is the best episode of the series. And it really does, in a lot of ways, save the series. Because I think if we talked about the original idea for Blackwater, if that had been executed without
the battle,
what would happen? Would we have had a season 3? Season 2 wasn't that good. But the Blackwater battle, people see that episode and like, oh, awesome. You know, especially the difference in quality from the preceding 8 episodes. Blackwater, I'm going to go 9.
Yeah, that's
right. I would go higher, but the rest of the season didn't do it any justice. That's not a flawless episode.
Mm-hmm.
And rewatching again the other night with Pat, which will air that episode next week, but rewatching that, it's not as good as I remember it. I think just having watched the preceding 8 episodes and then Blackwater...
I'm going to go with an 8.5.
Wow. Okay.
I don't even want to go to a 9.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I can't say I didn't like it. I can't give it to a 9 because I just, the season as a whole, I can't boost it. I can't give the 9 to give it the, I got to be legit with, I got 8.5.
See, I give it a 9 because it is a self-contained episode, which none of these other ones were. And they should have taken a lesson from it. Blackwater was so good, and it wasn't because of the budget and the battle. Like I said, we just watched it, and it wasn't that good of a battle. But the self-contained stories, the Hound, Bronn, and...
Right, so it's Sansa.
The complete narrative, which you didn't get at all in any episode this season, that's what made it work, and they should have taken a lesson from that, and in season 3, they should have juggled less characters each episode and giving them more to do, like you're reading chapters in A Song of Ice and Fire, you know? Baela and Margolis, the final episode of season 2, which I must say has been very, very disappointing season. We start the habit now, which we see over the next few seasons, of this being a
mop-up episode.
Yeah, mop-up, wrap-up, kind of nothing major happened, setting you up for next season.
Well, there's some, I wouldn't say major, but there definitely is some important thing that do happen in this episode.
Okay.
And you have the House Undying. You got the marriage between Rob and what's the face?
Right.
John goes away with the wildlings.
Tyrion is no longer hand to the king.
Yeah,
he's actually stuck in the basement.
The scene that I think the episode opens up with them naming Tywin Lannister. You know, the horse shits.
Yeah,
he only walks in.
Yeah, Baelish is given Harrenhal.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Strel asks that Joffrey marry Marjorie because we know the Tyrells came and saved the day by helping out the Lannisters. Sansa says King's Landing is her home now, and Littlefinger informs her she's not the liar she thinks she is. Roz greets a new customer and is startled to find it's Varys.
Ugh, God.
Okay, like, this is just...
What are they doing? I mean, I don't know. I remember watching those first two seasons, I thought maybe she had a big role or something, that this prostitute was going to be important or something. Because she's in it, like, more like, she's in it a lot of episodes.
But then she just winds up dead the next season.
Like, three, four episodes in.
Brienne and Jaime are still traveling through the Riverlands. They happen upon three Stark soldiers. Brienne kills them all when they recognize Jaime. Jaime had been saying that she serves the Starks, and she's like, "Nope, I serve Lady Catelyn. That's why I killed these Stark men." Catelyn tells her son Rob that Walder Frey is a dangerous man to cross. Rob doesn't give a shit. He doesn't want to marry Frey girl. And he goes and marries Talissa.
Mm-hmm.
Stannis accuses Melisandre of showing him a false prophecy.
And then he goes around.
And Melisandre tells him that the war has only just begun. It will last for years. Thousands will die in it, and it will be worth it. And then they stare into the fire. Theon's real sad at Winterfell. Totally messed this up. Maester Luwin tells him he can join the Night's Watch. He considers it. But then Theon says he's gone too far to be anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps hearing that war horn, the hunting horn.
He's going to betray him. Speech.
Yep. He makes a great speech to rally his men, but Dagmar Clefjaw knocks him out, betrays him.
See, I was always confused about that, too. Like, why did they betray him? I just got confused by that.
Well, he got safe passage. Ramsay gave him safe passage if he would just turn over Theon. It's not cool, but it's just how they worked it out. That's not Ramsay. Ramsay wouldn't give anybody safe passage. I mean, if they went back and later on showed that Dagmar was dead, he didn't get safe passage. Okay, no, that I can live with. But you betray the character of Ramsay if he gives him safe passage. Dagmar, on his way out, he kills Maester Luwin. Varys tells Tyrion that...
He sees the boys, and then he tells the boys they have to go north.
Right. Right, that's later on after the castle is burned.
Mm-hmm.
Varys and Tyrion talk about Men and Moor trying to kill him in the Blackwater. Varys tells him he can't hang out with them anymore. Bronn's no longer the head of City Watch. His tribesmen have gone home. But Shae's still there. She'll stay with him. And whatever.
I'm yours.
Yeah.
You're mine. My little lion.
My giant of Lannister.
Ugh, God.
Arya, Hot Pie, and Gendry leave Harrenhal, and they find Jack and Hagar waiting for them. He changes his face in front of her.
Right.
And gives her the
coin. If you want to go to Margolis. Say this word, Valar Morghulis. What is she then? And that's it with her then? What is she that for Arya in that episode? Is that it?
That's it for Arya in that episode, yeah.
Right, okay.
Because then you have the scene with Maester Luwin, which was sad seeing him die. That was sad. He tells the boy to go to the wall. Danny goes to the House of the Undying, which I know you like. You like the House of the Undying in the show, right?
A little bit. So, you know, I don't really like it.
It's the best they can do, though.
You really couldn't do a lot of things that were in the vision.
She says Jacarys and the little baby dragons kill Pai Pri.
Mm-hmm. And they come back, and then she puts, what's her name? And
Doria and Zaro's Doxis.
That's got to be a horrible death, being kid in there and no food.
Yeah.
I guess she died first. I guess she...
No, dude, you know, he ate her.
Yeah.
And then we have the big fight, Corn Halfhand and Jon Snow. And
this is where the fight is, yeah.
And what does he say? He says, "For the Watch." So he says, "Who does?"
"We are the Watchers on the wall."
And then they see all the wildlings, thousands of wildlings gathered to follow Mance. And then we get a really good ending for season two.
Yeah.
It would be a good ending for any season. But it's like the ending that you kind of expect in season five, season six, a big attack from the White Walkers.
Yeah, it seems like they're close. Seems like they're close to the wall right now.
It does. But I guess they're not.
Five seasons later, we're still...
And there's a lot of them. Whites and everything. It's, again, left on a cliffhanger because Sam is watching the White Walkers go by. Credits. End of season two. It did leave me excited for season three because that's a pretty good cliffhanger. But, well, first off, Valar Morghulis on a scale of 1 to 10. Stuff happens. More stuff happens. I feel like in this episode, it was all stuff you knew was going to happen.
7.25.
You know what? I'm going to go 7. No, I'm going to go 7.5. 7.5 on this one. That last scene makes it for me. Kind of like night and day with season one, huh?
Yeah.
So my high water mark for season two is Blackwater, obviously, at 9. What is Dead May Never Die at 8.25?
Look at this average. Season average for me is a 7.025.
7.2. Average episode is 7.2. Well, listen, you know what? Season two, they're lucky they got a season three. And it was the Blackwater episode.
Yeah. It was that 8. That was...
Honestly, this one quality episode. There's two decent episodes.
I got... Well, what would you go as good? What average would be good? A 7 or a 7.5? Do you think a 7 would be more rated as a decent?
7 would be decent, yeah. 8 to like 8.75 is good, and then 9 is like really strong. And obviously 10 is excellent, but...
So I guess I had 3 7.5 episodes and up. I had a couple 7 or 7.25s, and I had 1, 2... three episodes that are related that I rated lower than a 7, which is really...
Yeah, I had three that I rated lower than a 7 also. It was a rough one, bro. And it was all editing. Here's a perfect example. If you took everything that Arya did all season and you put it into one episode...
Or at least two episodes.
Or even two episodes. But if you did with the scene she was in, just made an all Arya episode, it would be the most boring television you've ever seen because she does nothing. Nothing happens. She's just chill out with Tywin, and then she gets...
In the book, she's like, well, that's one of my favorite...
It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's thrilling. And like, every time you think she's going to be saved, boom.
And you can tell me you can't do that? You can definitely do that. They had an opportunity to make a brave and bold move here with the show, and they didn't. They played it safe. I mean, look, they've gotten to season 7, and I'm excited for it. The quality of the show has gotten better and better. But it's almost like season 1 is possibly the best season, and then you go to the worst, and then like the second worst, or interchangeable.
Right. It's not until season 4, I think, where they finally start
to get better.
Right.
And then season 5, they kind of find their flow. And it's funny because the first time through season 5, I didn't like it. Now I think back on it and rewatching it, I do like it.
My markings was always, and I wonder if it's going to change throughout this. 1 and 6 interchangeable. That's kind of tough. 6, 1, 4. Yeah, I think 5 is my 4th favorite. We're saying how bad season 2 is. I still might think it might be better than season 3.
We'll go through that with a fine tooth comb next week.
Right.
Or rather the week after, and we'll see. But I don't know, man.
Back to back 4 seasons.
It's almost surprising at how it worked out this way.
And a lot of people will say, oh, they love season 3.
No, they love the Red Wedding episode.
Take the Red Wedding out of there and judge it on that. Take the Red Wedding out of there. If I take Baylor out of season 1, I'm still liking the season.
Take Red Wedding out, you still have some good stuff in season 3, though. You have the Unsullied episode with the dragons and Dracarys, and you have Brotherhood Without Banners. Yes. It's better than season 2, I think. Because I can remember storylines. Yes, what happened in season 2? Blackwater battle. That's it. There's no storyline that's of any interest.
When I did have the rewatch, I was enjoying it a little better season 3 than I did the first time when I watched it.
It is better. I mean, it's not as good as we thought it was, but it's better.
So yeah. But I think you're just going back with 2 seasons back to back that you're two weakest.
And the ratings kept going up. So what was it?
It's almost like mouth. For those people who like
and the holy shit moments. It was Blackwater. It was the Red Wedding. It was Daenerys and the Great Masters moments within these shows that made this show work. And now in the later seasons, you're 5, 6, 7, definitely for 6. And I think for 5, you have arcs within the episodes, which is more like season 1 was. Mm-hmm. It's not easy with all the characters they have. I know it's not, but they could have gone about it a different way. They didn't trust the audience to remember these characters. You put Theon in season 3, thinking that people won't remember him if you don't include him. But what if you didn't have him in season 3? And then season 4, he shows up and he looks like Reek. And you're like, whoa. You know what I mean? It's like when you're reading Dance with Dragons and you realize that Reek is Theon.
Right.
It's an amazing revelation. Why can't you do that on a TV show? You worry that the audience is going to forget who... The audience is watching the show because they like it. They're going to remember who he is if he's not on the screen for a year. But that's the route they went, and they decided it in season 2. They're just going to keep it sprawling, keep juggling all these characters, and hoping that you get moments of magic, moments like mm-hmm. the Blackwater, and don't get them that often. When you do get them, they work really well. But season 2 is bad, bro. It's bad. Not a good season.
Now,
Yeah, I used to think it was all right, but it's not.
Yeah, me too. Now it's being, we've got some doom and gloom going. Maybe you're,
yeah, pretty weak.
It's amazing that, again, I'll say, it's like you can oh, that happened in episode 6. Okay, yeah, episode 6, I guess.
Right.
Oh, it was really episode 4. Okay, but it's...
Doesn't matter. Like, it's all, everybody's in a flight pattern.
Right.
You know, nobody's moving anywhere. They're all just circling, waiting for Blackwater, and then it's like they go on with their stories. That's the way they chose to tell it, by including every character. Didn't have to go down that way. But once they did it, it's too late. That's the way they're going to do it for 3, 4, 5. So obviously, it's not until there's less characters that the episodes get better. It's unfortunate, but they made a lot of money. Game of Thrones is a wildly popular property. Just a shame that the books are so good, and we're not going to get the Winds of Winter because of you know, like season 2 of Game of Thrones is one of the reasons we're not going to get the Winds of Winter. Like, that's not fair. Like, if it was amazing television, like season 1 was season 6, then it's like...
So you think it's Jordan so involved in season 2, he was more... And he's, even the case was he'd still probably want to have it out now.
Yeah.
We're trying to give him too much credit.
Yeah.
Expect nothing of George R. R. Martin. You'll never be surprised.
Listen, if I was writing this all for the book and there was no TV show, I wouldn't mind as much. I mean, I would, but I wouldn't, because I'd be okay knowing that I'll get the resolution for the story from him. But when he made it a race against the clock... Anyway, season 2 Game of Thrones, that's what we got. We'll be back next week, and we're going to discuss the characters of season 2 of Game of Thrones. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk with you guys next week. Bum, 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 bum.